All right, welcome everyone back to Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, where it's all about popularity. That's all that matters to get into IT, which is why we're talking with Sergio Ramon de la Garza today, who comes from an extensive background in manufacturing of various different chemicals, plastics, and things that are really awesome, right? And but you know what's really cool is that you're doing this stuff for. No one can see this because this is an audio show, but I do want to congratulate you on looking for having been in some sort of technology all the way back to 1996. I'd like to congratulate you and me for how young we look and how good looking we are, you know, because we need that every now and then, you know. So I'd like to say congratulations. But what's really cool is that you're doing help desk and computer operations back in 1996, prior to Y2K, which I love talking about the old days. I reminisce about the old days. It's why my kids know that I'm old now. And when I was at a baseball game of my kids before, one of the girls was like, you know, she was, I don't know, talking with my daughter. And she's like, when are we in the 1980s? I was like, oh gosh, the 1980s is not long ago. It's not long ago. But anyways.
Not too long.
Let's go back in time. Let's start off by going back in time in 1996 and tell people how fun it was and scare people with the level of technology that we had to deal with back then.
Well, so, I mean, and I think this was one of the topics that we did say we want to go over. You know, originally IT wasn't even my first choice for a career. As a matter of fact, it wasn't even called IT back then. We called it, MIS and data processing. Right. And so
it was the audio visual department. It was
pretty much. so really it's me looking for a job to pay the bills while I was in school. And back then it was really going through your you know, newspaper. I mean, literally having paper in your hand and going through the want ads.
Mm-hmm.
And found a role that was originally wanted to be in finance. And so I was looking for like a finance role or, you know, clerk or AP, whatever. And so I called like my local staffing agency and they said, yeah, come on by, fill out, you know, a book of, you know, of our forms and stuff and, you know, whatever. And so I get there, do that. And by the time I was done, you know, pen and paper, filling all that stuff out, you know, those roles had already been filled. I'm like, man, you spent all my time. You could have focused on the skill set to do the job. But anyway, they said, you know, those jobs are filled. But you know what? We have this one computer operator night. For nights. And I'm like, okay, I could work there at night, go to school during the day, and then try to find something better along the way. And that I spent almost 11 years at that place. And I mean, you talk about drivers for antiquated printers, you're talking about Wang systems for ERP.
Mm.
You know, it's I mean,
it's the good old days. It's the good old days.
Floppy disk.
Wow, it was just so fun. You know, so fun in
the internet, right? You're going around updating people. We didn't even have, I mean, there was CD-ROM drives weren't even available. You know, so you had like disk one of like 30 to install like,
yes.
You know, Windows 3.1, right? I mean,
we should do a group show someday. We should do a group show today with the youngest guy in IT and the guy that was there at the beginning. I just got off doing a show with Brandon Escobar, which is going to release soon. He was born in 1996. So he's in IT and he was born in 96. What does he know? Brandon, we love you. Yeah. But I was like talking about like there's gonna be this kind of like changing of the guards that's gonna come sometime.
Yeah.
And it's gonna be I think even the other day we were referring to it as like, you know, the Obi-Wan Kenobis are going to die off, you know, and then it's going to be like, I don't know, this new school. But please, let's, I just want to talk, I want to reminisce a little bit more about 36 floppy disks to load.
Windows. No kidding. I mean, there was plenty of floppies for, you know, installing Windows. And, you know, first you had to partition your drive, you know, and you only had like maybe,
yep.
What, megs of your hard drive back then?
The partition's not big enough. What do we do? What do you do? No. What do you do when the partition wasn't big enough?
Yep.
I can't
remember. It was always one thing or another. And then, of course, you have, you know, your ring network. So, I mean, you know, Word, sometimes then you had all these coaxial cables running down the, you know, in the rafters and in the ceiling tiles.
Awesome. So awesome. I haven't had to format a hard drive in a long time and rebuild an entire operating system. Are we still doing that? Even like now I just throw the computer away and just go buy a new one. I'm just like kind of like,
that's pretty much it.
And everything's in the cloud. So I just, you know, I'm like, okay, just log in.
Yep. I mean, they're consumables now. You just, you know, there's no point in trying to rebuild it or.
You remember that? Formatting a hard drive. Oh, it's all screwed up. Just format the hard drive and just start over. Get out the 36 disks.
Build out, right? I mean, that's the only people I see building PCs anymore.
True.
But for day to day, I mean, again, you know, it's cheaper to just buy a new machine and go on. And you're right. Everything's in the cloud. But yeah, I mean, those days were interesting. I mean, you saw the beginnings of the internet, right? You had, you know, the browser wars with IE and Netscape. You had,
we had to take Bill Gates to court. I had to take Bill Gates to court and make him look like the evil person that no one really knows. Yep. He had to take a pie to the face. Okay. Poor Bill Gates. Poor Bill Gates. I mean, the guy, I mean, he's just, you know, he doesn't have anything. He had to take a pie to the face for Netscape or whatever it was. No, not Netscape. What's wrong with me? Internet Explorer.
Yeah.
How dare you try to monopolize the entire world and control us all with your Microsoft and.
I mean, for me also in the beginning, I learned Lotus 1-2-3 and WordPerfect. And, you know, 2 years later, it's like, you know, they don't even make them anymore. Right.
Have you been listening to the show? Have you been listening to the show? Because I ran into someone and they were still on Lotus Notes.
Really?
Yeah. Yes.
It's been
years. It was years ago. But when I say years ago, I mean like 4 years ago, 5 years ago. I bet you they're still using Lotus Notes. Lotus Notes. And we were talking about upgrading an Avaya. We're talking about upgrading an Avaya IP office. And the reason, and you know, well, it was the new system's got to work with Lotus. I can't make this stuff up, dude. Lotus Notes. And of course, the IT director had been there for like 36 years. So yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. What do you think about that?
Oh, well, you know, almost, you know, not too long ago. And when I say not too long ago, probably about 10 years ago, you know, 2013, 2014.
Less than a lifetime. Less than a lifetime ago. Yes.
A technology lifetime ago. Yes.
Yeah.
I had a coworker of mine who was working at they were a carbon black manufacturer, and they had not even migrated to using, they used all Microsoft products, but they did not use Outlook in exchange for email. They were using Lotus Notes. And I mean, that was just a wow to me. I mean,
but what was the reason? That's the key. The key is, what was the reason? It's like, because the CEO really loves this feature. It had to have been something like that.
It was actually, Lotus Notes allows you to develop databases on the fly.
Mm-hmm.
And so they had created, I mean, they practically built an ERP out of Lotus Notes, doing, you know, everybody had their, you know, 20, 30 databases to do their job every day. And so to take that away and try to build it out somewhere else, I mean, would have just been, might as well just shut down the company.
Huh.
You know,
sounds like an opportunity.
That's one of the things that you would wonder why a director or CEO would want to not start planning sooner for the, you know, stepping off that kind of platform or leaving it to grow, become such a beast that it's not even supported anymore. I mean, I don't know what it's like today, but
they're still on Lotus Notes. It's probably the same company. I bet you it's the same company we're both thinking about. We're going to talk offline about these guys. There's still people. In fact, I would love any IT directors out there right now. If there are any IT directors out there right now, may the Lord above bless you. I need to know if you are still managing a Lotus Notes. I need to know. I am on the search for somebody that's still on Lotus Notes. We need to have you on, and you'll probably never come on because you'll never admit it. But there's someone out there. So I'll even just take statistics. We'll bring you on. We'll change your voice. We won't talk about who you work for. I just want to hear, you know, that you, it would just be a fun show. Who has the oldest technology silo out there right now? Any other old technology silos?
That would be interesting to hear.
Maybe we could make a new Lotus Notes. Maybe that's the key. Maybe that's the new email. We need to like bring back, we need to bring back Lotus Notes in the cloud. Remember Lotus Notes? Did you love it? It's back. I want to know. I was probably too young. Didn't care. Remember when you used to be able to look up someone's address on, I don't know, whatever the first Microsoft email instance was. I don't even know. AOL, whatever. We had a guy on the show that met his wife, because he remembered he had someone like his high school sweetheart looked her up in the email address book, the global email address book, found her, connected with her, got married.
Oh, wow.
You used to be able to do that. Can't do that now. Well, it'd be crazy. It'd be like, you know, people are just trying to get your email now, let alone look it up. At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
Y2K, was it a thing Y2K. For you?
That was an interesting time.
It's just too much fun to talk about this stuff. I don't even care about modern day technology. Who cares?
I think back then, I mean, it was crazy because it was like everybody was freaked out about, you know, the end of the world, or, you know, once we go from 999 to 000, what's going to happen, you know, and all these last minute patch fixes for ERP, for, you know, apply this. I mean, we didn't, you know, back in those days, we didn't even bother testing. We ran the scenario, changed the data on our backup system probably like a week before,
and nothing happened.
Found a few bugs, updated a few patches, and then tried again. And you know, we said, I think we're good enough to get through business for the first week, and then we'll figure out everything after that. So I mean, it was really in hindsight, right? Because you think about 2000 compared to myself. That's year four for me in IT. That's still a grunt, sort of, still learning.
Mm-hmm.
But in hindsight, looking at it today, I'm like, I don't know how any of that got through, because I mean, I wouldn't let any of that fly. We should have been testing years ago. I mean, we should do that today. I mean, we test with our ERPs, but we got so much cloud today that, I mean, there's really no, I won't say there's no failure, but today there's definitely a lot more resources to prepare you for that, as opposed to back then you were kind of on your own and good luck, and unless you're paying somebody, you know, good money for your support, you know, you were pretty much, you know, like that company that I started with, it's let's bite the bullet. Let's take a hit and see how it goes. All right. We don't want to spend the thousands of dollars to prepare us. So we want to
just turn back the clock
and then just blame somebody else for if it goes bad, you know? So
there's still a layer. There's still a certain amount of that. There's a certain amount of that today. What did we worry about back then compared to now? What keeps you up right now? In other words, if I was to ask you, what's your single biggest, struggle, problem, frustration, concern, and you don't have to answer specifically, you can answer like in broad if you want, like what do you think nowadays, like IT leadership, what their biggest struggle, problem, frustration, concern is? What do you think it is?
I think it's cyber. I think it's definitely cybersecurity. Back then, we didn't care. I mean, there wasn't really a platform or a footprint to even, at least the way it is today, and it's how with social media and everything that we can have real time notifications of what's going on in the world. I mean, I think cyber is probably the biggest thing where you got to kind of always keep your finger to the pulse to understand what's going on, you know, the threats, the changes with that landscape. I mean, today you just get a text message that says, hey, I need to change my payroll banking, you know, and that's it. It's just a message.
Mm-hmm.
It's the kickoff is the social part of it. The person that's receiving it, are they going to act? And that's where you get them. Not necessarily a link that executes malware or, you know, a Trojan horse. It's really, you know, getting the sympathetic user to say, oh, okay, I'll do that for you. And I'll buy the gift cards for you. And, you know, and then you're, you know.
The gift card thing is ridiculous. Right? The gift card thing. It's like, how does it's like the Nigerian prince. And I know that I'm pigeonholing Nigeria here. So I have friends from Nigeria, so I'm allowed to do this. The Nigerian prince letter, you know, that's like, so I can't get the money out of the bank. But here's what happens. If you help me send this, then I'll pay you $100,000 for, you know, it's like, are people are still getting caught with that?
Yeah.
I had a colleague that got caught with the old, speaking of classified ads, the old Craigslist thing, which was like, you know, I'm going to send you the money, go ahead, wait, see the money is in the bank, and then send it to me. And really what they did was they sent like, you know, a perfect HTML, like, you know, screenshot of your account inside PayPal or something. Like, the money is received and you're looking at it like, wow, okay, I guess I got it. And then you send the thing in the mail and you didn't even go check your bank account. So that was a classic one. Yeah, I don't know where we're going with this. I just lost complete track of whatever I was doing.
We were talking about what keeps me up tonight versus.
Oh, yes. But that's not your fault. It's not your fault if HR gives out all the W-2s. I mean, that's just like, hey, they're going to blame you. They're going to come to you. I'm like, he should have told me that this could happen. Sergio's fault. Fire Sergio. He didn't tell me that someone's going to text me and ask for all the W-2s and immediately, and I'm going to need them right away and send them all to Jan over in accounting. And here's her email.
No, there's got to be some kind of, I mean, we have awareness training, but I mean, it's a lot more than that. And I think it's more vigilance, you know, that needs to be happening. The users depend too much on IT to prevent everything. I think it's more, you know, it's a collaborative, you know, I mean, it's just like your own home, right? Mm-hmm. It's not just me to make sure that I lock the door. It's, you know, everybody. All right.
Oh, so true. The home, you just stressed me out. You really did. You just stressed me out. Because now, when you said my home, now I just thought of like all the things. Because really, there is a lot of things. There's so many IoT devices too inside your home. Huh? It's your kids. It's your kids that are walking around with devices. It's people trying to fish your kids. That's probably one of the scariest things, I think. Yeah, any advice there?
I mean, really, it's more, I think it's just like when you try to provide awareness training to your users. It's the same thing with your kids. I mean, you know, I have a mid teenager right now, and she has, you know, her accounts, but she's also, I think it's more because of what we do as a profession. I think, you know, hey, you know, watch out for this. Hey, did you know that? But I think for myself, it also extends a little bit more than that, because my oldest is in IT. My middle son's in IT.
Okay.
And so the youngest, she's probably not going to do IT, but you know, you never know. But I mean, it's more of like, you know, I kind of use the analogy of like the TV show Blue Bloods, right? They have Sunday dinner at home, you know, all the cops talking shop. And it's kind of the same thing here, right? We all kind of go over, you know, me talking about the dinosaur ages of, you know, how we did things back then, you know, versus today, you know, it's all about cloud and Azure, or what is it called now? Intra. You know, and so, I mean, it's definitely, you know, we're all learning. We're all learning from each other, because there's, you know, old things that still work. And then there's new things that, I didn't know that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's a
It is a good point. Do you find, and this is something that I've literally just started to kind of notice, and it's not like this big shocking aha moment or anything like that, but I'm noticing a gap of years between the new IT leader and the old school IT leader. So there's the guys that remember Y2K, and there's the guys that do not remember Y2K, and they both have the same title. In other words, I've interviewed IT directors that are, they're an IT director and they're 27 years old or even younger. I think the youngest I had was like 19 or something, and like just came and just did such an amazing job and like upgrading the network and stuff. And so that's why they were the person that they were. And they're like, oh, these youngsters know better than us. You know, it was like one of those things where I was like, you know, and here's this, you know, look, everything's running so great now. Now that we put Jimmy in charge of that computer stuff, we're good. Because there is a bit of that still kind of old school company that's been around forever. It's a mom and pop shop. You've got all these locations, you've got this huge network, and we're still running on blue screens or green screens or whatever you call it. And there's an age gap between the two. And I'm wondering if we're getting too old. And what I mean that is, like, are we staying ahead of the curve from, because and the only reason why I say that is because sometimes, and I'm in technology and I'm in technology leadership and technology leadership show and been dealing with a lot of enterprise organizations and do consulting for years. Why am I asking my kid to do something for me in technology? Am I just being lazy, or is there going to be a big change of the guard and they're just so much faster in technology inclined? It's kind of like, you know, my father asking me to, like, hey, can you fix all this TV crap? You know, because I'll do it in 2 seconds. I'll be like, you know, plugging in cords and this and resetting routers and like, why is this not working? How'd you do that? You know, and then they're like, how did you do that? I'm like, you know, you're like a hero and you reset a router, you know, you reset a router or something. You know what I mean? Like, oh my gosh, you're amazing. How do you do that? I'm like, oh, and like, I can explain it, but you know, you just got to reset things in line and, you know, whatever. I'm just wondering if you experience any of that.
I sure have. And I think part of it is the era that kids are growing up today. I mean, everything is technology based. Everything is social, right? You know, you have your social media, you have, you know, during the COVID period, right? I mean, my kid was sent with the Chromebook home to do all her homework. And I mean, it's, you know, okay. So the one thing is, one, you're learning typing skills. Two, you're understanding, oh, okay, I gotta upload my work to the cloud, and I got to do this, and I got to submit that. And I mean, those are stuff that we, in the beginning, we really didn't do, right? I mean, we were traditional pen and paper, or, you know, an old computer to do our homework, and that print it out on a dot matrix printer and send it out, you know,
save it on two floppy disks, five and a quarter.
Sorry. And so I think it's an error that you know, the this generation is growing up in, where they have, I'd say, a little bit more experience in technology, though, and the use of technology. That doesn't replace, at least, you know, here me being the old dog talking, I don't think it replaces the experience of what we've learned by starting out before this all began, because then you understand more the business process. You understand, you know, the do's and don'ts of HR. You understand finances. So it's, you know, you get the little bits and pieces that are, you know, as a director, you know, it's not just, can I plug in two devices together and get it connected? You know, you get the whole gambit of, like, I got to worry how much I'm spending. You know, what about my licenses for this year? Yeah. What, how much is it, you know, the increase of cost? You know, so there's a little bit more of that us old dogs know from experience, versus the 26, 27 year old has a title, but we'll probably learn pretty quickly. But, you know, we've had to kind of pay our dues to get where we're at a little bit more, I think.
Yeah, that's why I've really been thinking long and hard about putting together the course, because, you know, like, there's so much money being made right now on, like, you know, I don't know. Thought leadership really annoys me. Like, everyone, I think everyone's entitled to their opinion nowadays. That doesn't mean that you need to be a thought leader or teach anyone anything, especially when you don't know anything. Somehow people are doing that. But I really do want to put together the course, and I do believe that I have the experience for this. And it's called the School of Hard Knocks and Common Sense. And that is going to be the course that I put together. Don't do that. Chapter one, don't do that. That's a stupid thing. Why? You know what I mean? It's like, common sense tells you don't do that. That's a stupid thing. Why did you do it? Example number one, case study. Jimmy decided that he was, yes, there's a lot of truth to that. Human interaction, empathy, not sitting on your phone. By the way, I do want to warn everyone, and I should have a product for this, and I should sell it, and it should be called Nerd Neck something. I have a slipped disc, C6, C7, and it's from doing all of this work in front of a computer for so long with bad posture. So I should be selling like some rubber bands that you have to pull apart, and, you know, neck exercise videos, something like this. We should advertise on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. So that's it for our video today, or our advertising that doesn't exist, which we need. Any vendors out there that want to be on the show, you should be paying us. We do have one vendor that's coming up shortly that has agreed that they want to pay us $5,000 per quarter to be on the show. So congratulations to them.
Not too bad.
This is truly a labor of love. But yes, empathy, understanding business, general business process, being able to speak maturely to, I guess, adults, and speak in a manner that is quick and to the point and speaks to the CFO and CTOs and CIOs. Like, this is what we had before. This is how much we are paying. This is what we have now. This is how much we're going to pay. This is what you can expect as far as growth. The return on investment is this. Do you want to do it? Yes or no? Here's the good, the better, and the best. Here's your pricing options. What do you want to do? Literally, it can be that fast when it comes to, I guess. Then there's talking to end users. No, you're not an idiot, Mr. End User. You're just old and you've never done this before. Not speaking to people like that.
That is true.
Things like that, you know, realizing that not everyone is, yes, I don't know, whatever these things that we try to pigeonhole people into, millennials, Z generations, not everyone knows what Fortnite is. I'm really being very stereotypical right now. Is this kind of what you were getting at?
Yes, exactly.
No. Okay. No. Yeah. So how do we teach people that? And part of the problem is they're getting poisoned by a lot of this new stuff. So it's interesting. I took the TV out of the house years ago, and I thought that was going to be like this big, amazing thing. And it was for a while. But nowadays, most people don't even consume stuff via television. Again, unless you're of our generation, which you're still being brainwashed by whatever you watch on TV all the time. They're just getting brainwashed via a different way, whether it's Instagram or some other thing. I don't know. So what I found was, when I observe my children, where they're getting information from is a different route that I would get information from. And there's something to be said there. I don't know what it is. There's just something to be said there.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, how do you teach that? I don't know. I mean, do they want to hear it? I mean, I don't even see the mentorship anymore. You know, somebody will say, hey, you know, how did you get there? What did you do? Or, you know, what could I do differently? How can I improve? It's I think it's also just that mentality of like, well, you know, this is what I deserve. This is what I need to be at. And, you know, it's like,
Entitlement. So we're going to go the entitlement.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Okay. So I'm on board with you 100%. I'm on board with you 100%. Forget this entitlement stuff. No, but really there is this, I'm not very political person. I don't believe in really getting involved in like politics. I pretty much like I'm a law abiding citizen. I follow the rules, but there are things that I see that are very stupid that I think, I'm just like, how, like, this college debt relief thing. And someone was going at it with me the other day. And I was like, I'm just like, it doesn't make sense to me that, you know, I was like, why should I be oppressed when I've paid off all my debt? Why should I have to pay someone else's debt? And they're like, well, their benefit is that you get to do that. Bill, that's what's so great about it, is that you get to do it. You have the ability to do that. I need a break. I was like, what? Doesn't make any sense. And you know what made a lot of sense to me was that the banks loaned out all that money that they didn't have to begin with, because they're loaning it out based on a perceived interest rate that they're going to receive. So they never really have any money anyways, which is ironic. That's why no bank robberies happen anymore. There's no money even in the banks to be robbed. Then they lend it out to people, and then the people can't pay it back. So they're like, well, we need to make money anyway. So let's have the people that do have money pay the government, and then we'll get paid. So it's like the banks make the money no matter what, which is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense? Did what I say, does that make sense? And there's going to be some money person out there that's like, Phil is such an idiot. He doesn't know how this stuff works. But to me, that's in the book of common sense. Well, I'm entitled to stuff. Where are we going with this entitlement? Oh,
we were going from mentorship to entitlement to
mentorship. Okay. So, I know what it was. Yeah. So my solution is like, don't go to school. Do not go to school. What is wrong with you? Why would you go to school and take a loan out for that stuff when you can be mentored? I'm totally down with the old school. I think we should come full circle and go back to, and that whole little parody of the banking thing, by the way, no one take that seriously, but kind of do. That whole parody was meant to just bring it full circle around to the, what happened to internships and mentorships and the old ways of learning where you would learn underneath someone under a tutelage, you know? And I think in reality is you could never really go to school for the job that you do. You tell me, I don't think you could go to school and learn Y2K in the school, even though that's past time right now. It's really hands-on experience.
It is. It definitely
just like
is.
I wouldn't want to, I just wouldn't want the guy that just got out of medical school to operate on me. I'd rather have the intern that had been watching the doctor for 30 years do a transplant. I'd rather have him do the transplant than the guy that just got out of medical school.
Yeah. No, I totally agree.
So the key, so the long 10 minute conversation there is mentors. Where do we go? How do we get them?
What do you think? I think that's where, you know, like us, I think that's where we fall into that. You know, if given the chance to say, hey, you know, somebody who wants to roll up and learn, right? And instead of, you know, I mean, I think in a good example would be another coworker of mine. He has his team under him that one is, I think, is a data person. He does like power or business intelligence reporting and whatnot. And so he's about to finish his master's. And so he's like, okay, great. So once I'm done, you know, my expectation is that you'll pay me times three of what it is today and I'll be able to do X, Y, and Z. And I'm like, okay, that, you know, talking with my buddy, it's like, well, I think that's not feasible.
It's sad because I've got PhD, not candidates. I've got people that I know with PhDs that's the expectation. That's the expectation, is that once I do this, I'm good. I will not take a job until I get the job that's this title and this position and pays this much.
Yep.
That's a farce.
It is.
So a lot of them go into education because I'm just going to be a teacher and because that's my life. Because that's really, I mean, I'm nothing against PhDs. I'm not saying that. That's great. I have a lot of friends that are PhDs that are authors and actually do a lot of things, right? But I've got... it's just, I don't know. It's,
But I bet your friends that are PhDs or near that have done that with the idea that as I'm doing this, I can do a lot of good doing these other things as well, versus, you know, your single focus of like, okay, I got my degree. This is what I deserve. Right. I mean, you know,
that's exactly what you said.
Yeah, our generation, we're looking at this, we're looking at that. It's like, how do we better ourselves, right? You know,
because they're close. I don't have that heart-to-heart conversation with them, and I'm not in that position to say, you need to go to the School of Hard Knocks and realize that that is not the case, and I'm sorry that you spent that much time getting a PhD. I'm very proud of you. You are very smart, but you need to go get in the trenches. it will definitely help you. I mean, it's the whole argument of like, do we need certifications or do we not? Like the PhD is like the ultimate kind of like certification, right? It's the ultimate certification in what though? You studied for a long time. I don't know. It definitely matters in many cases. It's just kind of that there's this balance in between of, like you said, mentorship. And where do you think because I want to take the show to the next level. We're trying to think of like, what do we do? Do we do want to do a retreat for everyone that's been on Dissecting Popular IT Nerds? I'm thinking like a mentorship retreat or something like that would be great. What do we do? Because everyone says it gets lonely at the top. We have no one to bounce ideas off. I can't go bounce my ideas off the CEO because he's going to be worried. I can't go bounce the ideas off the team below me because they're going to wonder, am I really the leader that should be in place? I'm all by myself on this single island. So we need mentors. We need people when it's lonely at the top to bounce ideas off of. But yeah, is there anywhere you can just, you know, how would you go about getting a mentor if you wanted to grow other than, you know, everyone in your family's in IT and your kids, have the benefit of being able to sit around a table at night and you can be like, you know, that's great. And that's very smart and all that. Don't forget, you have to be a human at the same time and learn to talk with people, you know, and, don't forget what's ROI. And they're like, huh? ROI. What do you mean? Anyways, I would love to.
I would love to
sit at your table some night and let's just do a podcast at your table with your kids and what you guys talk about. That would be cool. Fun. Go ahead.
That would be cool. I know some organizations do a center of excellence, usually within like private equities. Mm-hmm. You know, they have all their portfolio companies and they get all their IT companies together, IT leaders together and bounce ideas of how they can, you know, what are they doing? How can they do it? What do they do better? You know, I mean, that's one area I've seen it.
I've had that, but then people always complain. They're like, it really was supposed to be the center of excellence, but really it was 95% vendors talking to us and 5% of us outside in the hallways. Like, dude, I thought it was going to be this.
Yeah.
But anyways, go ahead.
No, that's true. I mean, it's always something like that. I mean, I think, I don't know. I really don't know because it is, I mean, I think you're right about that when you say it's lonely at the top, because I really, if I think about it again, other than, you know, the dining room table, there's really nowhere else I could bounce my ideas off for those same reasons, right? You know, Are you competent to be at this level? If you're asking me, what should I do? Right. I mean, it's hilarious, but at the same time, it's like, you know, who do you look for? You know, when you're the director, who do you look to help you mentor for your next role? Right. Who do you
trust
ideas off of, right?
Yeah, and who do you trust? Yeah.
So, and that's a big part of it is also trust, right? Because is your leader that 27-year-old that's running the department, or you know, is it you know?
All right. So let's switch gears then and provide some mentorship to the people out there. So, What is one of your simplest, biggest pieces of advice to help people make a big difference as fast as possible in a new IT leadership role or to grow into IT leadership? What could they go out and do? Raise their hands, provide, I don't know, something.
Well, I think one of the biggest things is if you're like in your area, right? It's do something to stand out. Take the risk, right? Look at, if you're a developer, understand infrastructure a little bit. If you're in infrastructure, understand what cyber is doing. You know, you start expanding that broadness of your area, and you start to understand what am I developing and how does that affect the business? Or if I'm preventing these attacks coming through, what is going on the other end? I mean, you start to see how all of it falls in together, whether you're looking at QA, you're looking at finance, you're looking at operations. I mean, you start to kind of just poke a little bit in all the little areas. It doesn't mean you're going to become an expert, right? Of course, you're not, you know, like that saying, right? You're the jack of all trades and the master of none or whatever. But by understanding a little bit of every little thing, right, you get to become, in my mind, more valuable. And at least saying, you know, what I'm doing is doing this. If I understood what that does, maybe the application I'm developing or the app that I'm creating should be more focused towards this with these type of users in mind versus, you know, this is the code, this is what it's going to do, here you go, good luck, here's your computer, have at it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's got to be some kind of consciousness of what you're doing it for, why you're doing it. You know, and I think that's, for me, the advice that I'd like to give, you know, if I was asked, you know, is you know, stand out, take risks, look around, you know, stop and smell the roses.
Yeah, the three thoughts that popped through my mind is like, try and hack some area of the company and say, see what I did. The other one was, is when you're getting hacked, hack the person hacking you and then you know, put together a sting operation and then show the, give the company a lot of good press. And then the last one was measure results. So how do you measure? I mean, to me, I think numbers don't lie. People lie, right? So how do you provide KPIs or measured results, or how do you say, hey, look, this is where we were, this is where we are now, I think is very valuable.
I think so. I think the metrics for us, I mean, we definitely, the probably the primary KPI is your ticketing, right? If you have a ticketing system, mm-hmm. what do the tickets look like? Why are they taking so long to close? Why are they, why are there so many open? Or why is it, why do we have a low number? Mm. And it could be, you know, are the users even using it, right? Because you get into, you know, I mean,
be skeptical.
It's anywhere. Yeah. You get users that are like, hey, you know, hey, Joe, hey, John, hey, can you help me out with this real quick? Doesn't get reported, right? So then how do you validate you how you spent 3 or 4 hours of your day? Well, yeah. I got pulled into it. Yeah. I got gotcha. You. But was it recorded, right? I mean, did we, or did you do the ticket after the fact? I mean, that's fine too. But I mean, that's, you know, one of the primary ways of seeing, you know, where things are at, good or bad, you know, and, you know, do we need to, that starts to look at, you know, do you need more resources? Do you need less resources? Are we having too much resources in one area and need to be in another? I mean, I think that's the primary KPI, right? And then of course, everything else is, you know, you start looking at like project deadlines, you know, we're implementing a new ERP, you know, the milestones that we put along the way, right? Or, you know, networking, how are we off of one, you know, and going onto a new stack? If we're like, for example, leaving Cisco and going to Fortinet or something like that. I think it's, there's
that
a
seems
lot
to be
of,
like, that, there's an exodus. There's an exodus happening right now. A great exodus from Meraki to Fortinet. Oh, that's big. That's, I mean, it's every day. It's, it just seems to be like every day right now.
Oh, well, we did that. I mean, for us, I mean, and you know, in the last two cycles of life for me, career-wise, I mean, we went from a Cisco to a Fortinet shop.
Love it. So, I love Fortinet. I've done it every day. I think we're looking at three migrations of some consulting on the side that we've done already this month with massive multi-locations that need to migrate off of whatever MPLS, and we're going to do Fortinet SD-WAN Lite, and we're going to do, you know, and just, it's just, it makes so much sense. And then if you want to do it without a massive capital expenditure and you don't want to just pay this big bill up front, we do an OPEX option of that too, which is kind of a secret sauce. Someone mentioned Fortinet guy, I think, or something. Isn't there a YouTube guy that's like Fortinet guy or something? It's like a, there's a really good YouTube guy that's like, I think his name is Fortinet guy or something like that. It's like everything Fortinet. Yeah, we need to collaborate with Fortinet guy. That's excellent. What's the key to influencing executive management and moving up in the world? And I don't know what should be the. Oh no, I know what I was thinking. Was, I guess that's one thing. One question is: look, what's the key to influencing executive management and moving up in the IT world? And what's the end game for IT? Which I think is a big problem. I don't think there is since a lot of us were born and bred in an area where IT again wasn't a real thing. It's kind of like, well, I'm in this. I don't even know what is the end game. Do I start an MSP and sell it? And I wouldn't wish that upon anybody. I just wouldn't. I mean, that can be miserable. You know, I mean, it's like. If it's just serving small business, because so many small business owners just do not understand the value of IT, and it's really just about cut costs and can I save $50 here, and then this whole battle, and you got to go to school on, you know, how to prove that that's not the case. And anyways, so that can be difficult. What's the end game? What's the end game for IT?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know what
the end. No one knows. See, that's the problem. It's a big problem. What are you going to do 10, 15 years from now? Still be in IT? Cash out on a 401k. I mean, I just, again, that's like a, it's a, we need an answer to that. We need, some guy's going to come up as a thought leader on that. Some guy, maybe I should be me. Some guy's going to come up on a thought leader, and it's going to be like, you know, we have a course, $6,000 a month on how to blah, 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 go from IT to retire in the Bahamas. And we're going to mark it down today. It's only $19.99. Join now. There's going to be some thought leader on that one. No one has an answer to that. What's the solution? solution is have a lot of kids, make sure they get into software development or something, and make sure they build something that cashes out for $1 billion. And there you go.
That's true.
At Dissecting Popular IT Nerds, we expect to win, and we expect our IT directors to win. And one of those areas where we know that we can help you win is internet service providers. As an IT director tasked with managing internet connectivity, few vendor relationships can prove more painfully frustrating than the one with your internet service provider. The array of challenges seems never-ending, from unreliable uptime and insufficient bandwidth to poor customer service and hidden fees. It's like getting stuck in rush hour traffic. Dealing with ISPs can try one's patience even on the best of days. So whether you are managing one location or 100 locations, our back office support team and vendor partners are the best in the industry. And the best part about this is none of this will ever cost you a dime due to the partnership and the sponsors that we have behind the scenes at Dissecting Popular IT Nerds. Let us show you how we can manage away the mediocrity and hit it out of the park. We start by mapping all of the available fiber routes, and we use our $1.2 billion in combined customer buying power and massive economy of scale to map all of your locations, to overcome construction fees, to use industry historical data, to encourage providers to compete for the lowest possible pricing, to negotiate the lowest rates guaranteed, and to provide fast response times in hours, not days. And we leverage aggregators and wholesale relationships to ensure you get the best possible pricing available in the marketplace. And on top of all of this, you get proactive network monitoring and proactive alerts so that you're not left calling 1-800-GO-POUND-SAND to enter in a ticket number and wonder, why is my internet connection down? In short, we are the partner that you have always wanted, who understands your needs, your frustrations, and knows what you need without you having to ask. So we're still human, but we are some of the best, and we aim to win. This all starts with a value discovery call where we find out what you have, why you have it, and what's on your roadmap. All you need to do is email internet@popularit.net and say, I want help managing all of my internet garbage. Please make my life easier, and we'll get right on it for you. Have a wonderful day.
Technology in the United States compared to other places is very interesting. I don't know if you have much insight on that, but I find it, if we're still have old silos, there are silos existing around the world. And that might be the key. That might be the key too, is I'm just trying to brainstorm here. You and I are brainstorming ways to become rich, make IT directors rich. Like, go to Costa Rica, probably cheaper to live there. Show them how to do more with technology or anywhere else in the world. The question is if you were, let's say you're, I'm going to plop you down in a country. We're going to use Morocco as an example because I was just there for 3 months. Not many people have Microsoft 365. That's just, no, we're using POP email. We're going to do servers because the exchange rate is, 1 to 10. So a $35 license in Morocco is like paying $350 a month for one license.
Oh, wow.
So I want to answer that question, because if we answer that question, we're going to put a team together and we're going to go, change a country. Or then we're going to do it to another country and another country as well. What's the answer? We're all going to be rich. Isn't that the truth though? It's not about money, Phil. It's not all about money. You're right. It's not. It's right up there with oxygen.
I think it's up there. Yeah.
No. Just some thoughts. This is just what's going across my mind right now.
Wow, that's interesting. Yeah, I didn't realize the disparity of cost and usage of technologies in somewhere like Morocco. I'll tell you what surprised me. I was in a conference sometime last year for our ERP system. Mm-hmm. And one of the topics was logistics. And
love it. One is my favorite, one's my least favorite. ERP, least favorite. Logistics, favorite.
Gotcha.
as far as pain and suffering goes. Go ahead.
So the discussion was using the ERP system and the mm-hmm. module and ERP and all this, and mostly everybody in the room's like, well, we still go and have our clipboard and the forms filled out.
Yep.
And another person, which was uses the CRP system, but you know their headquarters is based out of Mexico. Mm-hmm. Their Department of Transportation requires like all this technology, so everything is a tablet or a smart device
mm-hmm.
to be able to track things from point A to point B. You know,
I'm already mind blown for numerous reasons. Because it shows, it already shows the value of technology as a force multiplier. I can already tell where this might be going, but keep going. Yeah.
So, one, totally blown to think, and not to belittle Mexico, but was surprised of hearing that, you know, because, you know, thinking, you know, the great red, white, and blue, we should already be there. And we're not. We're not.
We spent so much money on infrastructure over the years.
Hearing, you know, that piece of it. And I really sat and listened to that. And it was really amazing how everything is just, you know, it's a point and click. It's, you know, authenticated through whatever security measures they have and then signed off. And then you got your weight, you got your shipping documents, you know, eco terms are all in its right place. I mean, it was really amazing to hear that whole conversation. It's like, wow. I mean, you know, and then the thing to me is like, why are we there? Why aren't we're still struggling with, you know, old EDI systems to manage our logistics of moving freight from here just across the street?
Do you think it's because we're fat? Do you think it's because we're fat and lazy and wasteful?
I think part of that is, I think we've become,
we're rich, we're fat, we're lazy, we waste money.
I think we become what's the word? Where you're just satisfied, you're just not content.
It's like the whole idea, it's good enough.
Yeah, exactly. Does the job, it's been working for 100 years, just keep doing it.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yep.
The other thing I noticed, 2 years ago, I was in Saudi Arabia for 3 months, and I'm driving around, and I'm noticing there's just no police officers. There's police officers, but it's more in like public places to like for entrance. And there is no one's getting pulled over. None of that. The second you enter that country or whatever, right? Like if you're going to drive a car there, they have your cell phone number. And if you go over the speed limit, I mean, you can't drive over that speed limit in that country for more than, I would say, 10 minutes without instantaneously a ticket getting sent to your cell phone, and you cannot go anywhere without paying it first. If you do not pay that ticket, you're done. They have if you run a red light there, it's a $5,000, which is, they do reals there. So it's a $5,000 real fine, which is the equivalent of basically $1,200 in US dollars. You run a red light, you're getting a $1,200 ticket. You can't travel out of the country. You're like, there's certain things that you cannot do until you pay that ticket.
Wow.
But what I noticed was it's technology and it works so well. And it's not just the tickets. It's how you renew your DMV. It's how you do like everything. It's like this digital, like what everyone's paranoid about here, you know, like the digital.
Yeah, Big Brother.
It is. It's Big Brother in a very good way. And it works really, really well. And it like made me think like, why don't we have it? Think of all the like unnecessary traffic stops, the police officers that are put in harm's way from, you know, a general traffic stop. And people that are running red lights and accidents that happen, and they map it all out. They've mapped out because they used to have like, you know, I think Middle Eastern countries are just renowned for having like, or even maybe even Europe, I don't know, crazy drivers. It's just a different, like, it's, you feel like, look, man, if you're going to drive there, you need to be like either from Massachusetts or some other crazy state in the United States that's like really known for like aggressive driving, like aggressive. Yeah. But they were able to correlate, again, back to data, numbers don't lie, people lie, right? They were able to correlate deaths and accidents because of these systems. And like, you know, it's all going down. So there's an example of, you know, technology. And I'm sure when someone presented that to the budget or something, you know what I mean? Like, I'm sure it was not cheap. I'm sure all these traffic cameras everywhere. It's on the highway. It's, they're everywhere. And they move too. So they have a way of like trick you. So you can't just be like, hey, don't forget about the traffic stop, traffic light there, you know? How they do it, it's just so well done. I must have gotten 3 tickets while I was there.
Oh, wow.
So anyways, works very, very well. I think that's an example. So back to the Mexico ERP system, it's a belief, it's a real strong belief in people really believing that they can use technology to be more efficient and do things better, faster, smarter.
Oh yeah, most definitely.
And I don't know if everyone believes in that. I don't know if everyone believes in technology and if every CEO in the US believes that they should invest in technology, but my answer would be yes.
I think one, the investment in technology, two is really start working with your people to use it, right? I mean, because you still have, like I mentioned earlier, you still got people that you can have the best system. They're still going to rely on their spreadsheets or pivot tables. And I'm still going to do my job the way I've been doing it for 15, 20 years. If there's even that many companies still with that many legacy employees. I mean, ours is, right? But
so great. I mean, I guess the answer is ERP systems, which is just such a nightmare.
Or at least work towards, you know, adopting that ability to say, you know, instead of spending 8 hours a day doing, you know, 3 spreadsheets, I could use the tools I have and then try. And again, I think it's more, do you want to better yourself or, you know, just good enough? I get through my day and then go home.
Yeah.
I think it's all attitude too, all how you perceive on what you're doing and how you're going to use technology.
It's true. It has been a pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for taking the time to give back to your colleagues. And I guess the main themes are we need to find a way to create more mentorship opportunities for each other. So for the youth out there, go find a mentor that has been through Y2K, and you guys collaborate together because you'll both mentor each other.
Well, I appreciate it, Phil. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.